audio now unmuted.
Yes, I can hear. I'm here.
You're good. I can see it. So as we still wait, we still have probably a few more minutes. So we'll give people a few more minutes. We'll get started at 6:30.
Audio now muted. Start share. Start my videos.
If you can just keep your microphone muted, just so that background noise doesn't interfere with Larry's presentation. And we'll just kind of mostly, I don't know, we can decide if he wants to communicate via chat or how we want to do that.
We can do chat, but if you want to unmute yourself anytime during the training, if there's something that's going on at that time that you have a question, you can unmute yourself and ask the question as we go along. I want you to feel very comfortable, as comfortable as you can with the topic, feel like you can share in here. So we'll have both options. If you want to just leave a chat, we'll be checking that on occasion to see what questions we might want to answer as we go along. If you just want to unmute yourself and say, I have a quick question that goes with what we're talking about, and you can just ask it as you have that question. Kelsey, have you found that people leaving their video cameras off during the training helps with any connection or?
It can. If you have a weak connection, then it's one of the tips that they give. If you have a bad connection, is to cut your video. So that's up to you.
I'm going to leave that up to each one of you. You know your connection better than anyone else. If you want to leave your video on tonight with your picture on here, you can. We just want to make sure that everybody that is in attendance does get a certificate sent to them as being gatekeepers after this training. Want to make sure that if you are at a place where your Wi-Fi may not be that strong, it may be better if you just take your camera off so that you don't use up that extra Wi-Fi to bring up your camera. I just want to make this training as easy for you to hopefully get the material that we're covering, because it is something very important, and some of you in this room tonight may have already experienced some of the things we're talking about tonight. So
it's half past the hour. All right, I will go ahead and start talking at 6:30 so that we can be respectful of everyone's time. My name's Kelsey. I work at the main library.
Message received from Jennifer Cleverly to everyone. Both me and my husband are doing this.
Okay, yeah.
Message received from Sue Finkel to everyone. Thank you for the presentation tonight on a serious and important topic. How long will the class last?
I mentioned in this email, it's a little bit longer than an hour. I know we typically, so this is because of the content, so this will go until about 8 o'clock. And I'll kind of help to help with monitoring time, since I know people have to go do things. So we are doing, just so you all know, if you look at our newsletter,
message received from Sue Finkel to everyone. Will it also be recorded in case I have to drop?
We aren't recording it. However, I don't know if you're doing other public trainings. I know we are going to have an in-person one in September here. And I don't know if you have other public ones that somebody can attend.
Actually, if I'm doing one next week on the Wednesday. Is that the 23rd?
Yes. Yeah.
On the 23rd, if you are go to safekentucky.org, I think it's a word. It's called KSPAN, Kentucky Safety and Prevention Alignment Network. I've been doing these virtual trainings with them during the pandemic, and we have one next week. That's a virtual one, and so that one will be next week, and it's open for anyone all of these gatekeeper trainings are going to be free, and they are open to the public unless otherwise stated. But the one next week is open for anybody. So that's another time that you can let friends and family and anyone else that you think may benefit from this training to maybe get registered for that next week. I was trying to think, that one's going to be during the day. So a lot of it may depend on your work schedule since they have theirs usually scheduled. I've only done one night training with them during the pandemic. The rest of them's been during the work day. So that may be a deterrent for some, but if you are interested, just make a note in the chat that I'm interested to find out about this training next week, and I'll get the details for you.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, we're not recording it just because this is something it's one of the, that is pretty important to just, if possible, to stay through the whole thing in order to get the completion certificate. So, but yeah, we are bringing back some in-person stuff, including this in September. And then, so just kind of keep an eye out on our website and our newsletter, and we'll go for there. So I'm going to quit talking and turn it over to Larry.
Well, thank you so much, Kelsey. It's been a pleasure working with you the last few years on these trainings here in Boone County in Kentucky. Where you're at tonight viewing this training, you may be in Kentucky or you may actually be somewhere else where it's done virtual. As long as you register, you have a connection. So actually, I've had people join in some of these trainings during the pandemic from places that I wasn't expecting to see on here. So, but I do appreciate you taking time tonight and being a part of this training. For me personally, I've been a certified QPR, Question, Persuade, Refer, Suicide Prevention Gatekeeper Trainer since 2010. And over that time, I've probably had well over 200 trainings that I've conducted and several thousand people that's been trained as gatekeepers. December of this past year, in the midst of the pandemic, I became a master trainer for the QPR Institute, which they're based out of Spokane, Washington. And it's one of the older techniques that's used in suicide prevention because it is proven to save lives. And it's something that in a matter of an hour and a half, you can have three key tools to your tool belt to help when you come across someone, not if, but when you come across someone that may be suicidal. I do want to say, because of the nature of this topic, there may be some triggers in this presentation. If you're someone that needs to step away because it is overwhelming or it's just hard to hear some certain things or see certain things if we watch a video or something, feel free to step away and recollect, or if you need to sign out, that's okay too. I don't want to put anyone's safety at risk here because this is a very sensitive topic that can actually have triggers that some people will have a hard time adjusting to. At the beginning here, there is a pretest evaluation. Kelsey has put that in the chat room on the chat feature. If you would go ahead and click that on if you haven't filled that out yet, and fill that little short evaluation out. It's only a few questions. But while you do that, I'm going to show this video. And in the midst of our pandemic that we're finally on the other side of, and we're seeing a much larger light at the end of the tunnel through this pandemic, we are still living with a lot of fear. And when we live in that fear and uncertainty, we have a lot of concerns about our mental health and the struggles that go on within our minds. So this video here touches on that. So we'll take a few moments and watch this together.
Message received from Kelsey Shackleford to everyone. Pre-class survey. https://princeinstitute.com/survey?mark=1%code=219698922.
We told you you're not strong enough to put up a good fight. We told you you're not worthy. We told you you're not loved. We told you you're not beautiful. Never be enough. your fire fall, cast out all my fear. Let your fire fall, your love's all I fear. Let your fire fall, cast out all my fear. Let your fire fall, your love's all I fear. Let your fire fall, cast out all my fear. Let your fire fall, all I fear. Oh, let your fire fall, cast out all my fears. Let your fire fall, all I fear.
Tonight we're going to talk about
message received from Karen Neubauer to everyone. Let us be great.
Ask a question, save a life. A little bit about myself. I've already shared a little bit about my background as a trainer, but as a vocation, I am a vocational rehabilitation counselor with the Kentucky Office of Vocational Rehabilitation Blind Services in Covington, and I've been with them since April of 2007. I'm also the vice chair of the executive committee for the Kentucky Suicide Prevention Group, and also last summer, during the midst of the pandemic, I became a board certified mental health coach through the American Association of Christian Counselors. But the one thing that really helps me to have an empathy and some insight on what many people are going through when they go through mental health struggles, when they go through traumas, and that is that I'm a survivor of severe depression, general anxiety with panic attacks. I'm someone that still takes a medication every day to help me with this, keep it regulated with my anxiety. And so many times with depression and anxiety, they coexist. They go together. And so many times we'll see someone that is diagnosed with one, many times is diagnosed with the other as well. Even though when you look at it, you kind of have two different types of situations. Depression slows you down. You feel sluggish. You don't want to do anything. Just want to be to yourself. And when you're anxious, you get fidgety. You start having this little hyperness, so to speak, that causes you to not be able to sit still, to your mind starts fidgeting. And so when you see the two working together, your brain, you can only imagine, is haywire. It doesn't know what's going on right at that point. So when I think about my background and what I bring to a training like this, I know what it's like to look in a mirror and not recognize the person that's looking back at me. When we start wondering why people will get to a point that they're willing to end their life, you need to understand that. You need to realize that they get to a point that they even lose their identity of who they are. And when you get to that point, it can be a very dark and cold place. So after going through this training tonight, you may say, I would love to have this brought into my community, my workplace, my church. I have done this training actually geared towards specific groups to show how relevant this topic of suicide is to any group. And I cater that training to that specific group. So if you know someone that can benefit from this training, please reach out to me and let me know so that I can set up a training pretty much like this. And as Kelsey said earlier at the beginning, we're starting to open up completely to where we could do this in person again. I see Jennifer's raised her hand.
Yeah, I just got a quick question. Me and my husband are both taking this tonight. Does he need to be on here too on his phone, or can we be on just one phone?
You can, if you can view it together, that's okay. We thank you for letting us know. You might want to put, you mentioned you being on there, you might want to just put in the chat your husband's name so that Kelsey will know as we give out the certificates afterwards that that your husband was on here with you.
Okay. I will. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for joining us. But here's the best way to contact me. We're back in the office now. I've been back in the office in Covington since the end of May. So this is my fourth week that I'm wrapping up back in the office.
Message received from Jennifer Cleverly to everyone. Our names are
the Larry, L-A-R-R-Y, dot McNabb, M-C-N-A-B-B at ky.gov. And I'll respond back fairly quickly back to you if you do reach out to me and when you have any questions or any concerns, or if you just want to try to schedule another training with someone else that can benefit from this. My goal as a trainer is to equip every person that I can with these three tools.
Because message received from Jennifer Cleverly to everyone. Kenneth Cleverly and Jennifer Cleverly.
Like CPR for heart attacks. The more people that are trained and knows what to do when you come across someone that's suicidal, the more lives that are going to be saved in that community. And here in Northern Kentucky or wherever you're at tonight viewing this training, I want you to have that passion too to say, we need to equip as many people as we can to be the eyes and ears, the hands and feet in our community that can help the counselors, the psychologists, the psychiatrists, the therapists, the pastors, all of the people that are trying to help those that are struggling just to get through another day. So don't hesitate to reach out to me if you have any questions or just want to do some follow-up with me after this training. One of the things that I have found over the years of working in this field is there are certain words that we have a hard time saying. In our society, it's hard for many of us to say the word died, dead, dying. We instead, when we have a loved one that has died or is no longer alive, we will say they have passed on. They're no longer with us. We find a phrase that kind of gives us a more indirect way of saying that our loved one is no longer here, because it's hard for us to even say those types of words that I mentioned. So just imagine, if you will, that we have this word here that's on our screen right now, suicide. It's such a short word, seven letters, that it is so hard for many of us to say it out loud. But we're going to practice this tonight here at the beginning. I'm going to count to three. When I count to three, I want, wherever you're at right now, I want you to say it out loud, the word suicide. Okay? Pretty easy. One, two, three. Suicide. Let's reflect for a moment. With you saying that out loud, what triggered within your mind? What did you think when you said that word out loud? For some of you, it might have been anger. Maybe you've experienced the loss of a loved one to suicide recently or somewhere in the past that still is hard for you to hold on to, that way of that you lost your loved one. Or maybe it's guilt. I wasn't there when a loved one ended their life. I feel guilty that I
incoming call, carrying. Call,
had
carrying.
Going out and doing something that they could have been in a different location. We find that we're sad. Many of us get really sad by just saying that word, that we have to say a word like that in our society because it is something that's a reality. We have so many people each year that are documented suicides in our community, in our state, in the nation, in the world.
Displaying with that screen.
Each one of you to find a way that you can do some role playing. Tonight, we're not going to have the time to really do some role playing, but I would encourage you to find someone, maybe if you're with a loved one tonight doing this training. One of you could be that person that's struggling to live through another day, and the other person is a friend. And come up with a storyline as you're sharing your experience, and then catch some of the key phrases, some of the red flags, some of the warning signs that may be there that you would come right out and say. You know, when some people are as depressed as you seem to be, they think about suicide. Are you thinking about suicide? That's one way you can ask the question. Are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about ending your life? I like putting that word suicide in there when I ask a question, because we want to know that we are familiar with this and we're not hiding from this word. We want people to be open and share with us if they are contemplating suicide. So practice, if nothing else, practice on yourself. When you look in the mirror, ask yourself some questions and answer those questions. And then even ask yourself, are you thinking about suicide? Because the bottom line is, the person we talk to the most is that person that looks back at us in a mirror. We talk more to ourselves than anybody else. So go ahead and have that conversation with yourself. But I would encourage you to find ways that you can become more open in sharing this word, because it's something that we can't keep silent anymore. I want to ask you 5 questions here. Wherever you're sitting tonight, think about these 5 questions and just see how many of these hit home with you and relates to you. The first one says, how many people here have had a loved one or someone close to you end his or her life by suicide? How many people here have had a loved one or someone close to you attempt to end his or her life by suicide? How many people here have...
Message received from Brielle Mayer's iPhone to everyone. Name for certificate, Sherry Brielle Mayer.
Depression and or some other mental health disorder. Last 2 questions. How many people here have had a loved one or someone close to you that has had that does have a drug and or alcohol problem? How many people here have had a loved one or someone close to you that has had a life-changing incident or a trauma happened to him or her? I can almost say with certainty that of these 5 questions that I just asked our group here, you could answer at least one of them saying, me, I did. Whether you have experienced that devastating loss of a loved one to suicide, or you've experienced the attempt of a suicide by someone that's close to you, or someone that you know and care for has a mental health disorder, or many times it's better described as a brain disorder because it is an actual misfiring of the brain that causes people to have the mental health disorders. And we've had many people that know loved ones, people close to us that have had drug and or alcohol addictions, abuse. And then many of us know someone, maybe even you yourself, that has had a life-changing incident recently or a trauma that's happened, whether it's a traumatic brain injury, a mild one for many of our military personnel. Many of them are exposed to explosive devices out in the theater of action that causes their brain to not fire as normal, the way it should. And because of that, many of them come back here being totally different than what they were before they went into the theater of action. As of 2012, we lose more individuals, active individuals in the military, to suicide than we do in the theater of action. You're more likely in the military to take your own life than to have your life ended by a perceived enemy. And that's something that should be a wake-up call for all of us. Because right here in Kentucky, you're going to see a stat here in just a few moments, but I'll go ahead and add it with what I'm saying here with the military. You're about three times more likely here in Kentucky alone to die by suicide than you are to die within a homicide. So you're more of a threat to yourself than someone is to you. And that's something that we have to stop and say, wow, I never thought of that. I've never heard those stats. But these are things that we need to start thinking about, because we know that many of us in this room tonight have had a thought of suicide sometime in our life. Studies after studies show that almost every single one of us at one time or another has had a suicidal ideation, a suicidal thought. Whether that was a brief moment or it was something that was chronic and lingered around for a long time. So if it's something that almost every one of us, if not all of us, have experienced at one time or another, then why are we still silent about this topic? Why are we not communicating with each other and getting across to each other the core question that each one of us have? And that is, do you care? Do you care? We are constantly looking at people around us. And as we look at people that pass us, the people that walk up to us, people that we encounter throughout a day, that question weighs in the core of our hearts and minds. Do you care? And for so many people, they feel isolated. This pandemic really brought that out. Many people were alone. Our teens and young adults, even though suicide itself went down in 2019, that is the last year that we have updated information on suicide loss here in the United States. In 2020, as they were calculating numbers here in the United States, even through the pandemic, we were seeing numbers lower on suicide than previous year. But we also saw many times of an increase, six times in some cases, an increase from teenagers and young adults needing to call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline because they were really struggling with their mental health. And now that things have opened up the way they have, we still see a lot of people struggling to be able to take the next step because they have been isolated, secluded from other people, and we get in a mindset that no one knows how I'm feeling. The only way that people around you will know how you're feeling is if you gain that strength and let people that are around you know how you're doing. We all need a helping hand. When we look at some of the numbers, these numbers are staggering when you look at it. 47,511 documented suicides in 2019. That's an average of 130 suicides every day just here in the United States. Picture, if you will, a plane. This plane crashes. One day, the next day, another plane crashes. Day after day after day, there's a plane crash somewhere here in the United States that ends the lives of 130 people. How long would this keep going on before the public, everybody around us would say, we've got to do something about this? Why are all of these planes crashing? Why are all of these people dying in these plane crashes? We would want to know what's going on with those planes, with those pilots. The people are dying. 130 a day? We would want some answers. But that's what's happening with suicide every day. But we still will remain silent way too often. When we look at how how many attempts is there, are there, for each suicide? In the general population, it's estimated that there's 25 attempts for every suicide. Taking the teen population and young adults, there is 100 to 200. One study even went as far as saying it's possible that there's even 300 attempts for every suicide with this younger generation. Because many times, attempts do not require medical attention. And people don't know that that young person attempted to take his or her life. But for another population that you don't think about when you think about suicide, the only category that increased in 2019, the only age population that increased was 85 and older. Grandparents, older parents, our seniors. There's only 4 attempts for every suicide with this age group. If you're around someone that is a senior, or you work in a facility, nursing home, you need to pay attention to what those that are in your care are going through, what they're saying, how they're acting. But when you look at that, that is the one area that has the highest population per age group, just age group alone, the highest population overall is a middle-aged white male. They have the highest suicide rate of any population. And we'll talk about some of those risk factors. But suicides now exceed death by car crashes. More people are more likely to end their life by suicide than be involved in a death, a fatality of a car wreck. So when we look at these numbers, these are staggering for many of us because we've never heard these numbers before. Here in Kentucky, in 2019, we had 756 documented deaths. This doesn't take into consideration what coroners and medical examiners determined as maybe car accidents, unknown, sometimes suicide by cop, being in a shootout with police officers with the intent of saying, I know I'm going to die in this. But when we look at Kentucky stats, we see that stat I used earlier, 3 times more likely to die by suicide than by homicide. That's kind of a unique component right there for just Kentucky. There are a few other states that have a similar number like that, but to know that 3 times more likely, that's something that we have to take notice of and realize that many people that do die by some form of suicide, we never know that it was a suicide. How many drug overdoses were actually suicide? We're in an area where we saw a lot of drug overdoses. The pandemic brought out a rise of overdoses because many people were using their drug of choice in an isolated situation, not having anyone around that could call for help or get help if someone was to overdose. So these are things that I've had parents ask me, do you think my teenage son or my teenage daughter that died by a drug overdose, do you think he or she intentionally took their life? My only response for something like that is, did they leave a suicide note behind indicating that? And in most cases, contrary to what movies and TV shows show us, the overwhelming majority of those that end their life by suicide, they never leave a suicide note. So unless that person left a suicide note saying their intentions with that drug of choice that they overdosed on was a suicide, the only person that could answer that question, parents and loved ones, no longer around to be able to answer that. Males are about 3.5 to 4 times more likely to end their life by suicide. Females are 3 times more likely to attempt a suicide. And why is that the case? Why is there so many more females that attempt suicide, yet such a higher number of males that will actually end their life by suicide. And the key part of that is the means that was used. But a startling thing happened in 2018 that women, when there was other methods that would be their attempt when they attempted a suicide, whether it was hanging or choking or overdose of some type of drug, many times prescription drugs already in the house. But in 2018, we saw that women, actually the leading cause for suicide deaths of women, of females, became handguns as well. So now we're starting to see something we didn't want to see. That now the overall population getting that access to a means that they're not in the mindset to really hold control of, and that is a lethal means of like a handgun. So these are some stats that I wanted to throw out to you, just how serious this is. As we look at what causes someone to think about suicide as a possibility, there are several things that come to mind, because suicide is unique to the person that attempts to take his or her life. The circumstances that led them to a point of thinking that life can't get any better, I don't want to go on anymore feeling this way. But three things that really stand out with Dr. Sean Shea here, and he mentions three origins: the external stressors, death or loss, rejection by a significant other, public humiliation, serious illness, war, you name it, small stressors matter. All these stressors can become like a snowball effect. They keep building up on each other as they're rolling along. One stress after another, after another, after another. The pandemic for some of us was that way. We just kept picking up more and more stressors in the way that we were isolated from so many people, so many loved ones. But the interesting thing about external stressors is that in the midst of a crisis like we went through with the pandemic, we see that suicide loss is actually lower.
The suicide thing.
Crisis. Suicides increased to a peak.
But I'm recording.
90.
So I can just quit. Yeah, it's breaking.
This pandemic, and many of us are starting to encounter loved ones that have taken their life by suicide just recently.
I turned it down because I'm recording it anyway.
Cognitive distortion with or without mental illness.
I'm recording it anyway.
There's this, something going on within the brain itself.
My iPhone 7.
People around us can't see it. And that's what makes mental health and trauma to
my
the brain
7.
Many times it makes it hard for other people to see what's going on unless you open up and share what's going on with you. Because it is an invisible battle that's in the brain that controls the mind.
Yeah, I'm going to go on my computer working right here.
Neurobiological dysfunctions, internal causes within the body itself that causes the brain to go haywire, if you will, to misfire, to not work the way it should.
Yeah.
And then there's external toxins in the atmosphere, in the water we drink, in the soil, the food we eat. Many times we see some health warnings on some of the products that we put into our body because they found that there's toxins being leaked into these products that we're actually consuming. So there are some things that are going on there that lead someone to get to a point that they may be thinking about suicide. So when we move on, here's a quote from Dr. Paul Quinnett. Dr. Quinnett is the doctor that started the QPR Institute out in Spokane, Washington. And this is a quote that he mentions that I want to get across to you tonight. The person most likely to prevent us from taking our own life is someone we already know. The person most likely to prevent us from taking our own life is someone we already know. So think about those people, those five questions I mentioned earlier. Start thinking about What do I need to say? What do I need to do to have a conversation with that individual and to get around to saying, are you thinking about suicide?
Don't ever run this.
Look at this question.
It's going
to
fail.
Remind yourself from time to time that you are going to be equipped.
If you delete the OneDrive desktop by accident, which, or OpenDrive desktop by accident, you have to reinstall it.
There is a psychological pain that Edwin Snyderman, he is one of the founders of suicide prevention. Suicide prevention's only been around in recent years. There was no suicide prevention trainings and education that you could do to help someone that may be thinking about suicide until more recent
and
times,
also you're going to connect to the VM and
20 years ago, 25 years
do
ago,
the team dog server?
Before that, we really did not address that concern. Stripped down to its bones, in almost every case, suicide is caused by pain. The pain of excessively felt shame, guilt, anguish, loneliness, humiliation, burdensomeness, or not belonging, a certain kind of psychological pain I call psych ache, which can become lethal when deemed by that person to be unbearable. And that is what hits the core right there, a psych ache. We all have a perception of things that go on around us. What I perceive to be overwhelming and something that I cannot overcome, you may look at that same situation and say, I deal with this all the time. Or it could be a reverse of that. Something that is overbearing to you and overwhelming to you may not be so with me. It's that perception that that person has, that they're looking at a situation in their life and all of these circumstances of their life and say, I can't do this. My mind aches, a psych ache. So we need to remember this is a real kind of ache, but it's an ache that many people can't see because you don't sit there and go, ow, that hurt. It stays up here. Here is something that I really want to bring out here before we get into our three steps. Is it can happen to anyone. Wherever you're at tonight, it can happen to you. It can happen to me. I've been there. I've been to the point where I didn't want to wake up in the morning. So it can happen to anybody. This quote right here, I want you to remember this. Put it down on something. To know that anyone can be vulnerable. I am now the most miserable man living. If what I feel were equally distributed to the whole human family, there would not be one cheerful face on the earth. Whether I shall ever be better, I cannot tell. I awfully forebode I shall not. To remain as I am is impossible. I must die or be better, it appears to me. This was said by Abraham Lincoln, January the 23rd of 1841. Abraham Lincoln, if you've read anything on his history and his struggles in life, you know that he went through a lot of losses. He had a hard time in politics trying to win any office, local, state, much less the president of the United States. But he also dealt with a lot of depression. And so when we see that Abraham Lincoln had this quote, I would dare say that unless you've been in a suicide prevention training before that used this quote, you have probably never heard this quote from Abraham Lincoln. Hold on to it. Say, you know what, when I think that I'm not vulnerable myself, just remember, Abraham Lincoln was willing to say, I either must die or get better, it seems to me. Only one of two choices. He could not continue living the way he was. So, let's read through this right here on this little paragraph. It says, we can no longer be silent. I am a silent killer. I am indiscriminate, and I can strike without warning. I not only kill, but I destroy the lives of those that are left behind. I cause chaos and trauma. those that have not come into contact with me are frightened to utter my name for fear I will touch their lives. They don't realize that the only way I can be stopped is to talk about me. I am depression. I am suicide. Raise awareness. Stop the stigma. All studies show around an average of 75% of all suicides come from depression. Over 90% has some form of a mental health disorder. As I said earlier, we can even refer to it as a brain disease. Yet, it was only in recent times, in 2013, that right here in Kentucky, we became only the second state in the nation that required mental health providers to have suicide prevention training. The people that deal with the biggest causes of suicide were not trained in suicide prevention. Until 2013, the state of Washington was the first state we followed suit after that. Now there are some states still trying to put things together because July of 2022, next year, next July, it is a federal mandate that the whole nation will have a national suicide prevention lifeline number that is no longer the current number of 1-800-273-8255. In a crisis, many of us will never remember that number, that regular number. But in July of next year, states are already preparing for it. They're getting their crisis lines ready for it. They're getting their staff ready for it. They are preparing for that number to be changed to 988, like 911. Three numbers to remember when you're thinking about suicide. Someone to call and get help. We're making steps. Still got a lot to go. The why question, death by one's own hand, is far too much a final gathering of unknown motives, complex psychologies, and uncertain circumstances. There again, going back to the suicide note, I've read some suicide notes, but most studies that have shown on how many people will leave behind a suicide note prior to their suicide is around the 10%. One study I saw had it around 25%, but that's a high number compared to what many of them say. So we see around the 10 to 25%, at the most, one in four suicides leave behind a suicide note for family and loved ones to make any reasoning of why this happened. Try to look at that why question that haunts many loved ones for the rest of their life after you experience the loss of a loved one to suicide. When we look at people that have attempted to end their lives, this one right here, Kevin Hines, probably one of the most well-known individuals that attempted to end his life, September of 2000, he is someone that still today struggles with bipolar. He has a type of bipolar that he starts hearing voices, and these voices says to him, Kevin, you must die. Kevin, you need to end your life. He hears these voices go on and on and on. He's been institutionalized in mental health facility multiple times. One time here, more recent. And he travels the world talking about his mental health struggle, how real it is, to give us insight of what his mental health struggles are. But he also shares about the story that day that he jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. And he was only one of 36 people to survive that fall from that bridge. To share his story now, of those 36 people, he has met 14 of those survivors. And I want to let you watch this 1.5 minute video as he shares a little bit about that day.
Thank you. 2000, the year 2000, I became so depressed within every week that I was spinning out of control. I decided that I had to die. And so that was the decision I made. I was going to go to the Golden Gate Bridge and jump off. I walked upon that bridge for, I would say, probably 30 to 40 minutes, crying my eyes out. You know, I was hoping that someone would come up to me and say, are you okay? Is something wrong? Can I help you? And I had made a pact with myself that if anybody said that, I would tell them everything. I was so shameful that I couldn't speak out to anyone the pain I was in. Thus, I ended up dipping off that bridge. And at the moment of free fall, I said, God, please save me. I don't want to die. My dad always used to say to me, Kevin, you're
that was quick.
And you're drowning. Stand up. If you're in 2 feet of water right now,
that was quick.
Stand up. Walk forward. It's okay to ask for help. Nobody can do it all by themselves. Nobody.
As we look at that video, what Kevin,
you
want
to make sure it works or what?
Of the individuals that he has talked to since his own experience that day on the Golden Gate Bridge, he said of those other survivors, they all said the same thing. They thought they had to die until they were in the moment of free fall. Then they said, God help me, I don't want to die. Crying out for help. And that's the thing that we need to realize is that suicide is really not the big issue we're looking at here. It's what's causing someone to get to a hopelessness state that they feel like suicide is an option. You get to a point where your hurt becomes more than you can bear. And where that threshold is for each one of us, sometimes we never know just how fragile we are or how strong we may be. But the one thing he mentions in that short little video was, he said his dad told him that, Kevin, you're in 2 feet of water and you're drowning. In 2 feet of water, you can drown. You may be drowning right now. You may know someone that may be drowning right now. Then he said, my dad told me, Kevin, stand up. Move forward. Take a step forward for help. None of us, and he says that none of us, can do it on our own. No man is an island.
Cool. Can you add it to my VM CGCOM?
We do it ourselves. We need one another. We need help at times. We want to help other people as friends, family. We just need to know one.
It's on the E drive, remember?
We need help with. So why is it so hard for us to ask people for help when we know we would want to help someone that's struggling? Question, persuade, refer. QPR is not intended to be a form of counseling or treatment. QPR is intended, however, to offer hope through some positive action. There's myths that we have. I'm going to go over a few of these. I won't go over all of them for the sake of time. Because this topic right here on suicide prevention, it really can encompass so many things for us. But in this short time that we have here, I want to make sure that you have some of the facts, some of the things that really is going on in, when it comes to suicide loss. But I also want you to know that there are myths. No one can stop a suicide. It's inevitable. The fact of the matter is that if people in a crisis get the help they need, they may probably never be suicidal again if they get the help they need. So it's not inevitable. Only 2% of those individuals that have depression actually will try to end their life, will attempt to die by suicide.
Have a moment, those boss.
When you look at that small number, but you're saying that's in the minds of so many people. So if those people that are struggling with mental health struggles or addictions and or addictions or traumas of some sort get the help they need, they can rise out of that dark, cold place. Confronting a person about suicide will only make them angry and increase the risk of suicide. about suicidal intent many times lowers that anxiety, causes them to have open communication with you and lower the risk of an impulsive act, because they, first of all, know you care, as we said earlier, but they know that you're paying attention, that you recognize that they need help, and you're asking them about it. So they actually, don't be surprised if you actually ask someone the question if they're thinking about suicide, then all of a sudden a floodgate of stuff comes out, and they get bottled up because they didn't think anyone wanted to know how they were feeling or what they're going through. Only experts can prevent suicide. Truth of the matter is, suicide prevention is everybody's business, and anyone can help prevent the tragedy of suicide. There are approximately 135 survivors of each suicide.
Backspace real quick.
Survivors, that the pain of one person is now upon many people.
I need to check something. Backspace real quick.
25% of those 125 to 135 to 145 in one study that recently came out, we saw that 25 of those needed intense
Backspace again.
Counseling because of the impact of that suicide and how it's affected.
There we go. Now. So there we go. Now put a... Wait, why is there... How many line feeds is there? What the... Why is there...
And we all
why did I do that?
To help save the lives of our loved ones.
Okay, there we go.
Suicidal people tend to keep their plans to themselves. Most of them, sometime prior, the week prior to their attempt, will share something that says to those that are paying attention, something's not right, something's wrong. The key thing I want you to remember tonight on this is if you notice a change in someone, ask why the change, even if that's a good change. Why there is a change. Because that is a warning. That is a red flag that says for some reason this person's not the same person that they were. So even if it was a good thing, if they want to share why they've changed in a good way, ask that question, why the change? So when we say that people that are really suicidal that they don't talk about it, well, that's a myth. People who talk about suicide may try or even complete an act of self-destruction. We used to call it parasuicidal, someone that would cry out wolf, basically. If such and such doesn't happen, I'm going to kill myself. If I don't get to marry this type of person, I'm going to kill myself. And they randomly just threw out that phrase that if this doesn't happen or that doesn't happen, I might as well end my life. That person is parasuicidal. And the fact of the matter is they're many times more likely to eventually take his or her life by suicide. Please remember this. No matter what you do, try to help show you care.
There we go.
Support someone. Suicide like no other death. Is a personal decision.
Yep.
It's going to be ultimately up to that individual whether he or she makes that step to attempt to take their life. But don't let that ever stop
you from
caring and doing what you can to be that roadblock. Say, I want to do what I can to help keep you alive. How can I help? Ask the question. Because it is the most
important. But we're going to start it. Where are you going to go?
Someone, if they're thinking about suicide, it's going to put that thought in their mind. As I said earlier, almost every one of us, if not every one of us, have had a fleeting moment of thinking about suicide as an option. Since that is the case, you're not putting that thought in anyone's mind by asking that question, are you thinking about suicide? So go ahead and ask. I've had parents, since they did this training, would say, you know what? My kids live throughout the country now, so when I talk to them on the phone and they seem down or depressed, I'll ask them after I get some information from them, are you thinking about suicide? And if so, we need to start planning what we can do to help.
All right.
So it is kind of a wake-up call.
I guess I'll give you a call if I need you.
It's inevitable, is a myth. Confronting a person about suicide will only make them angry and increase the risk of suicide. Many times it lowers that anxiety. Suicide clues and warning signs. The more clues and signs observed, greater the risk. Take all signs seriously. These are direct verbal clues. If you hear someone say this, please react immediately. There is a crisis, an active crisis. I've decided to kill myself. I wish I were dead. I'm going to commit suicide. I'm going to end it all. If such and such doesn't happen, I'll kill myself. These are direct clues that someone's intention is death. I am telling you flat out what my intentions are. I cannot go like this any longer. That third one there is something I would like to educate us here tonight. In saying I'm going to commit suicide, we hear this in the media a lot, too often. We hear it in the movies and TV shows a lot. Suicide is something that for many people is a trigger, because they say someone commit something, it's a crime. Years ago, you attempted to end your life by suicide, it was considered a crime. You could be put in prison if you survived your attempt. When people look at suicide, they automatically think when you say commit suicide, it's a judgmental way of looking at it. You don't want to know if I'm really thinking suicide.
Hey.
So, start thinking.
Can you go on my box real quick and download Doug, or go on my box and download the TTCOM that I need for my Mac? Can you go ahead and can you help me configure that? Can you copy the all the server stuff from my box to the Doug TTCOM? No, because I had to redo the Mac, remember?
Indirect clues. I'm tired of life. I just can't go on.
Yeah.
My family would be better off without me. Who cares if I'm dead anyway? I just want out. I won't be around much longer. Pretty soon, you won't have to worry about it.
Oh, wait, I know where it's at.
We may hear someone say, but we may not know.
Let me check something. Hold on.
What are you meaning when you say this? If someone was to say to you,
my box. No, where it's at.
You say I just went out. What are you saying? Even if we think we know what their intention is by saying these phrases, give them a chance to talk. That's what we want. We want to listen.
Wait, I know where it's at. Hold on a minute.
Put ourselves in their shoes and look at what they're going through, kind of from their perspective, through their lens, if you will. So when they say I just went out, you may say, oh, I know what that means to me.
Hold on.
Some situational clues. You've been fired or expelled from school, moved to a place where you didn't really want to move, didn't want to move from your previous location. You had a major loss of a relationship. For teens and young adults, this
Wait, I'm gonna.
When you lose that first love, that first big relationship for teenagers and young adults, the first thing we have to remember is, as adults, sometimes we say, why do kids think the way they do? Why can't they understand? Well, let's just stop right there and say, the prefrontal cortex of the brain develops up to 25 years of age. So they're going to college, making life-changing decisions while their brain is still developing. So we have to realize that they can't think of things the way we do as adults with a mature brain. So when we think about that, a major relationship that has been lost can be devastating, because you see what happened right in front of you. You can't see that this was the best decision for months to come. I'll see that. Or a couple years down the road, I'll see that. I'm glad that that relationship didn't work. For that teenager and young adult, this could be something that's very overwhelming and overbearing. If you have lost someone close to you to suicide, especially to suicide, it's a clue that you're higher risk. Diagnosis of a serious or terminal illness. You have a loss of freedom, going to prison. You have a loss of a job, financial security. You lost someone
close to you that
was a support person. Or you have a fear of being
You just hit the auto login thing.
An older group that was such a high risk. Many times our seniors, when they lose a spouse, when they have to move in with family, many times.
Aaron's Macintosh TTCom. No, it's M-A-C. M-A-C-I-N-G-O-S-H.
To say I care. Sometimes you might have to be a little bit more persistent and spend some time getting to hear them, listen to them, and then, if needed, to ask certain questions so that they can let you into the world and what's going on is causing them to think that suicide is a possibility.
Yeah.
Talk to that person alone in a private setting. Don't call them out. Allow that person to talk freely. Don't be checking a watch or a cell phone. Focus on that person for the next few minutes, however long that conversation may be. Get that help for that individual. Give yourself plenty of time. Let them talk openly. This is a time that it would benefit us to really listen. And I know it's hard for many of us to do nowadays, is to actually listen to one another. Have your resources ready. You've got a QPR card, an e-file that was sent to you. Go ahead and put some emergency crisis numbers on there. Here in Northern Kentucky, two numbers I want you to always remember. If someone is thinking about suicide but has not attempted yet, it's done behavioral. It's a big crisis unit they have in Erlang.
Just hit the control key.
Interstate. You see it every time you drive down 75.
There.
But if someone has already attempted a suicide, St. Elizabeth. Take them to the emergency room and get them checked out. And then next steps can happen. Get the
message received from Kelsey Shackleford to everyone. If you didn't receive a message with several attachments, please let me know and I can resend it tomorrow.
And you need to remember those two resources when you come across someone that may be suicidal. Remember how you ask the question is less important than you just ask it. One of the ways you can ask it indirectly is, have you been unhappy lately? Have you been very unhappy lately? Have you been so very unhappy lately that you've been thinking about ending your life? You allow yourself to work up to being able to ask the question. Do you ever wish you could go to sleep and never wake up? It's easy enough for many of us to ask. Just a regular conversation. But when someone says to you, yeah, sometimes I do wish I could go to sleep and never wake up. What does that look like for you? What does that mean to you? Then you can be a little bit more direct. And then when it comes back to it and your gut instinct says to you, yeah, this person may be suicidal. Now maybe I can ask, are you thinking about suicide? Here's a direct approach. I mentioned this one earlier. You know, when people are as upset as you seem to be, they sometimes wish they were dead. I'm wondering if you're feeling that way too. The thing that really stands out in that kind of a question, it lets someone know they're not alone. Because it says, you know, when people are as upset as you seem to be, first of all, it's you're paying attention and you recognize that they're upset. And then you can follow up and say, you know, when some people are as upset as you seem to be, they wish they were dead. I'm wondering, are you thinking that way too? Then they start realizing, I'm not alone. I'm not alone. You look pretty miserable. I'm wondering if you're thinking about suicide. If you know someone fairly well, and you're having a conversation with them, and your gut instinct starts saying to you,
sorry,
this person
go ahead.
Thinking about suicide.
Oops.
You're pretty miserable right now. You may use this type of a question. But the one I like using as a counselor, the one that I have used on occasion, is this last one. Are you thinking about killing yourself, or are you thinking about suicide? Coming right out and asking that question in the midst of a conversation.
I don't know.
You're having a conversation.
I mean, because the Zoom call is almost over. I got the gist of it. I'm going to call Michelle and see what happens there.
Mail. Active. Messages. 2 unread. Page 5 of 10. Social.
Call Dylan.
Stop button.